comes back to get Ben, so we sit in a booth and joke around. Alex teaches Ben how to dip his fries into his chocolate milkshake, and it's like a light bulb going on right over the kid's head. They include me in their little jokes, and Ben asks a lot of questions, but for the most part, I just let them do their thing, let them be brothers, and it makes my heart hurt in my chest. Alex shouldn't have to hand Ben off to Jackie like a loner sibling he gets to borrow for a couple of hours. He's going to be a great role model to his brother once he finally gets custody. It's just such a shame that he has to go through the nightmare of family court first. Things get nasty inside those courtrooms. Really nasty. And now things are even more complicated because Ben's suddenly calling Jackie mom, and she's whisking him off to Hawaii? Jackie's smart. Alex might have secured the help of his social worker in order to build his case for when the time comes next year, but Jackie's laying her own groundwork. He thinks of me as his mother, Your Honor. I've been able to take Ben traveling, to show him the world. I've been able to enrich his life and give him experiences he'd never have otherwise, Your Honor. What can Alex do for Ben, really? His life is unstable and unpredictable. I am the safer bet. I hate that this sort of game is being played. Alex has no choice, though. He either participates or he gives up any hope he has of ever being granted custody. He's going to have to be just as conniving and manipulative as Jackie if he wants to beat her at her own game. And how does Ben come through the other side of that kind of warfare unscathed? I have something for you, Ben says shyly, reaching into the pocket of his jacket. Alex stares down at the small, haphazardly wrapped gift that Ben places down onto the table and slides toward him. The paper's Christmassy, covered in dancing elves.
What's this for, bud? Alex asks.
I was going to wait to give it to you at Christmas, but we won't be here now. So, Mom said I should give it to you now. Alex reacts sharply to that word again, the muscles in his throat straining, his face bleaching of color. But he doesn't correct his brother. He doesn't say a thing. He manages to smile at Ben, a sick, unhappy, miserable smile that makes me want to burst into tears, as he picks up the gift, inspecting it, turning it over in his hands.
That's really cool of you, man, he says. Early Christmas presents are the best kind. I'll give you your gift on Wednesday, before you go away, okay?
Ben's head dips a little. He picks at the bottom of his milkshake glass with his fingernail. Mom said I won't be able to come next Wednesday. She said there won't be time. I can get it when I come back, though, right? That'll be like an extra Christmas, after the real one's over. Fuck. I can't bear the void look on Alex's face. He clears his throat.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that sounds great. I'm still going to talk to Jackie about you coming next week, though, all right? But if it doesn't work out, then that's what we'll do. In the meantime, I'm not going to open this just yet. I'm gonna wait until we have our Christmas, okay?
We walk back to the movie theater, and Ben chatters away happily, telling us about the girl who likes him at school and keeps following him around. Alex is there for all of it. He interacts and he makes jokes, and Ben's none the wiser. My boyfriend is simmering with rage, though, dangerously close to boiling over. Jackie doesn't get out of the car. She honks the horn, shouting at Ben to hurry up and get in out of the passenger window, and that's it. Ben goes, and Alex is finally able to drop his happy facade. It's snowing again, and he takes me by the hand and charges up High Street toward the Camaro. Alex, wait, just slow down. Where are we going?
The Rock, he snarls over his shoulder. Fair warning, Argento. I'm about to get seriously fucking drunk, and it ain't gonna be pretty.
22. Silver. The music thumps up through the soles of my feet, pounding and raucous. The Rock is jam-packed with half-drunk patrons, the makeshift dance floor writhing with bodies. The tequila shots we threw back when we got here haven't seemed to make anything better. The only thing that's changed is Alex is now sullen, frustrated, and a little buzzed.
Of course she never lets me pick him up and drop him off. If she did that, I'd get 2 extra hours with him, even if it is in the car. And she couldn't fucking have that, could she? Anything she can do to prove to me that she's the one in control, she does it. She's trying to fucking take him away from me for good. She's gonna try and adopt him, I just know it.
You don't know that. Playing devil's advocate seems like the only way to stop him from diving off the deep end. He's right, though. It does look like Jackie's planning on keeping Ben on a permanent, more official basis. She wouldn't be letting him call her mom if she wasn't. Ben was so small when their real mother died. He can't remember a single thing about her. But Alex does. Alex remembers plenty. And to hear Ben called Jackie by the name must cut him down to the quick.
Another round for you, asshole, Paul the bartender yells at Alex over the racket. And another shot for you too, Angel.
He's much more pleasant to me when he sets my tequila down on the bar in front of me. Alex touches his glass to mine and downs the amber liquid, drinking it straight, without the salt or the lime.
Jesus, you really are blowing off steam tonight, Paul says.
Alex presses his knuckles into the edge of the bar so hard it looks like it must hurt.
You have no fucking idea.
I wish I could do something to help him. Fuck, I wish I could take away this hurt. That's all I seem to wish for these days. The magical ability to stop the people I love around me from suffering. Paul only sees Alex's anger. He doesn't see his pain. He reaches a hand into the front of his bar apron's pocket and pulls something out, slapping it down onto the bar in front of Alex.
There you are. Go downstairs and give your beautiful girlfriend an orgasm or two. That'll make you both feel better in a quick fucking minute.
Downstairs. Downstairs? Takes me a minute to remember what takes place below the rock, in the bowels of Montgomery Cohen's establishment. This isn't just a bar, after all. There's something far more scandalous in the basement. The Rock's very own sex club. Alex curves an eyebrow at the two tickets Paul has just shoved at him, his eyes turned almost all black in our dimly lit corner.
I don't think that's the way to solve this particular problem, he says,
his tone unamused.
And besides, I don't think we'd need tickets.
He slides them back across the bar to Paul.
I've never needed a ticket to an event being held at this place. Tonight's different, Paul pulls a face. There's a burlesque act down there. Monty sold spots, there was so much interest. The bouncers aren't letting anyone down unless they have one of these.
He waves one of the tickets in Alex's face. The silhouette of a naked woman has been embossed in gold on the front of the black flocked card. At the bottom of the ticket are stamped the words, Admit one only. Alex doesn't seem to care about the tickets in the slightest, or what's going on downstairs.
If you really want to make me feel better, have another shot of tequila lined up and waiting for me by the time I get back.
He turns to me and plants a swift kiss on my temple.
I'm just gonna run to the bathroom, Argento. Stay here and keep our spot.
Sure. Paul forcefully plants the tickets in my hand as soon as Alex has disappeared, swallowed up by the crowd.
If you've never been down, then you never know, he says. Could be fun, right? Don't you want to be a little freak, just for one night?
Go down into the club? With Alex? The thoughts never occurred to me. Okay, that's a flat-out lie. I've thought about it all right. I've imagined what it would be like with him to descend the stairs and see what kind of Dante's Inferno-type madness takes place down there. The images I've conjured in my head have riled me up for sure, but the twinge of excitement I feel as I look down at the tickets in my hand are fueled by curiosity and nothing more. I don't want to go down there to put myself on display with Alex. I'm not that desperate to see a bunch of other people naked and writhing on top of one another either. I just have no frame of reference. What the hell goes on in a sex club, for fuck's sake? It's the not knowing that's making my cheeks feel warm.
I'm gonna go serve a guy at the end of the bar. If the tickets are on the bar when I come back, I'll put them away and we'll say nothing more about it. If they're gone, well then I suppose I might run into the two of you down there later.
He winks, and for the first time I wonder if Paul might be attracted to Alex. I don't think he's gay, per se, but the way his eyes are shining right now, his excitement doesn't seem geared toward me in any way. Is he picturing my boyfriend sweating over me, grinding himself between my legs? Is his dick hard thinking about Alex fucking me? God, that's such a weird... Hey! Fingers dig playfully into my sides. Alex's voice is hot in my ear. He's standing behind me, his chest suddenly pressing up against my back. I nearly hit the roof, surprised that he snuck up on me. Why does it feel like I just got caught doing something wrong, I wonder? Alex sees the ticket still on the bar, and his brow furrows.
Paul could probably make good money on those things. A drunk guy in the bathroom said he'd pay $150 a pop for him and his wife to bag their passes. He says it's nuts down there.
Aw, he's just trying to cheer you up, I say. Who knows? Maybe he's right. Maybe a little debauchery would make you feel better. I've never seen a burlesque show before.
Alex throws back another shot of tequila. He doesn't swallow, though. He holds the alcohol in his mouth, looking at me out of the corner of his eye.
I do a shot of my own, pretending that I don't notice him staring at me. Alex eventually swallows, looking me up and down in a very odd way.
What? I laugh, because I can feel a flush creeping up my neck, and the way he's studying me is making me feel a little self-conscious.
You want to go down there? He says, blunt as ever.
No! Oh my God, no! I just meant the burlesque.
He steps into me, ducking down, bending his tall frame around me, taking me into his arms. His lips brush against my ear as he speaks.
I can see it on your face, Argento. You want to fuck down there, don't you? You want to be naked. You want all those eyes on you while I make you feel good. You want hands on you too?
I try to wriggle free.
No, 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 no. Jesus, just stop. You're such a perv. I don't ever want anyone to touch me but you.
Good, because I won't be held responsible for what would happen if another man tries to touch your bare skin. I'd break every single one of his fingers, probably both arms too.
God, it's so hot in here. My face feels like it's on fire. I'm burning up.
Ha, but you're okay with the idea of a bunch of people looking at my naked body though, right?
I wouldn't go that far. I'd probably glass anyone who looked at you too. Fuck, I don't know. I guess there is something hot about the idea. People looking at you, at me, watching us fucking, getting off on it, wanting us.
But not having us, I reaffirm.
No, definitely not. No fucking way.
Alex picks up the second shot Paul set out for him while he was in the bathroom. He holds the glass to his bottom lip, pausing there, waiting for me to pick up a shooter of my own. His gaze is heavy on my skin, loaded with curiosity. He looks like he can't quite fathom what's going on in my head, and it's driving him crazy. The tequila burns like a motherfucker as it slides down my throat. Each shot I drink seems to burn less and less, though. It feels like my whole body is burning already, and the alcohol is barely making a difference.
You want to go, Alex says.
Reaching out for me, he takes hold of my loose hair and slowly winds it around his fist.
Naughty little Argento. If you want to go down there, just say so. Be brave and open your mouth.
He arches an eyebrow at me wickedly.
Stuttering all over the place and freaking out.
Damn it, he's so infuriating. Admitting something like this to him. Fuck, first I'll have to admit to myself. Yes, I want to go down there. I want to look. I want to see. I want to experience something new and crazy. Is that so bad?
Alex's tongue flicks out, wetting the swell of his lower lip. A lean, hungry look about him, and a curl of want weaves its way up my spine.
Fine, have it your way.
I slap my hand down on the tickets, drawing them toward me across the bar. They go straight into the back pocket of my jeans.
I want to go.
All of Alex's pent-up anger and frustration shifts on the turn of a dime. I witness it take place right before my very eyes. One second, his dark, bottomless eyes are still sparking with the powerful desire to burn down half of Raleigh. The next, they're filled with excitement and intrigue, and for better or worse, his piercing attention is sharply focused on me. He maneuvers himself so that I'm trapped between his body and the bar, the sticky, booze-soaked wood digging into my lower back. He braces himself, hands planted firmly on top of the bar, me captured securely within the circle of his arms. A nervous thrill of energy ripples from the top of my skull, down the back of my neck, dipping over my spine, making the skin on my thighs break out in goosebumps. Fuck, the way he's looking at me right now. He wants to devour me, consume every piece of me until there's nothing left. The things he's thinking about right now are already making me blush,
and I have no idea what's going on in that handsome, beautifully tormented head of his. Leaning close, he whispers into my hair.
It's a viper's pit down there, Argento. We look, we don't touch, we are not touched. Anyone tries to take liberties, I will fucking break them. If it looks like you're getting overwhelmed or stressed, I pull the plug and we walk right back up those stairs. Lastly, anything I say goes. Those are the rules. Now finish your last shot. We're leaving.
Alex. I can count on one hand how many times I've been down here over the past 18 months. This will make for my fourth excursion down these stairs, while the Rock's Wages of Sin court is in session. The first time, I had to feed the beast. I had to know what the fuck was going on down here. I was just as curious as Silver seems to be now, so I sat in one of the dark booths alone, absorbing everything that went on around me, cataloging and filing away the writhing, naked, red-lit flesh to be assessed at a later date when I was back in the trailer. I stayed for a little over an hour, draining half a bottle of Jack in the process, but I was approached at least 8 times during those 60 minutes. To my discomfort, it was mostly guys, huge, jacked, ex-con type dudes who looked like they could eat me for fucking breakfast, asking if I would fuck their wives. Suffice it to say, I politely declined their generous invitations. Their wives might have been hot, but even back then, I wasn't stupid enough to participate in an activity that was likely to get me fucking killed. The second and third time I came down here, I was running cases of beer down to the club because the punters had drunk the bar dry. I can't decide if coming down here with Silver tonight is the dumbest thing I've ever done in the history of my life, or if it will be just another strange thing we can't say we've experienced together. But I'll admit, there is a sense of anticipation relaying around my body like a train on a track, growing faster and faster as it careens down the lines. I walk ahead of her, casting my eyes in every dark corner of the club's main bar area, a habit I picked up in juvie, as well as every foster home I ever stepped foot inside. Once I've established that there's nothing to be wary of, I look around again, forcing myself to see the place as Silver must be seeing it right now. For the very first time. The place is packed with half, and in some cases, fully naked bodies. From the looks on people's faces, there's absolutely nothing untoward about this. Groups gather around high top tables, sipping cocktails, laughing and joking with one another. Naturally, there are no windows. The bar that runs along the left-hand side of the room is lit with subtle yellow lamps and candles dotted along the shelves, in between the polished bottles of liquor. The rest of the club is bathed in red light, casting sensual shadows across exposed flesh. At the far end of the bar, the stage is double its normal size, and 3 extra stripper poles have been brought down from upstairs. People, couples, and occasionally a 3 or 4-some, lounge in the booths angled toward the stage, watching as a raven-haired woman wearing little devil horns on her head dances seductively on the stage. In her hands, she uses 2 large crimson feather fans to hide her body, strategically turning them over and spinning them, letting one fall only to preserve her modesty with the other at the last second. Or nearly preserve her modesty. She's naked, pale skin practically glowing up on the stage, the fans covering anything that might make her blush. Except every few seconds or so, a fan will slip or be coquettishly lowered, and the curve of her breast will be visible, a flash of nipple, the apex of her thighs, and the dancer is not blushing. I give Silver a sidelong glance. She's seen worse than this upstairs in the regular bar. The strippers up there get fully naked if enough dollar bills are dropped at their feet. It's different down here, though. There's a heightened sexual tension in the air. The men and women at the high tops, sprawled out in the booths and leaning up against the bar, haven't just come to enjoy the show. They've come to find some excitement of their own. They make some sort of clandestine, taboo connection with someone, even if that connection is only made when they meet a stranger's eyes, and an unspoken message is passed between them. I am nothing more than my desires. I am here to be used. I am here to be plucked. I am here to command. I am vulnerable, powerful, weak, broken, hurt, strong. This is absolutely insane, Silver says. I watch as her eyes skate over the scene before her. She pauses on a couple in a shadowy booth close to the burlesque dancer. They're in their late 20s by the looks of things, sleek and toned. The kind of couple who have a joint fitness account on Instagram and wear t-shirts that say Swole Mate on them. The woman is completely naked, her legs parted, and the guy sitting beside her is stroking her clit, teasing her, whispering into her ear as she stares, glazed-eyed, at the dancer. My dick stirs in my pants, already getting hard. Not because of the woman being teased by her man, but by the brief burst of dark fascination that flares in Silver's eyes. She reins it in quickly. I could believe I'd imagined it, but her breathing is a little too deep, a little regulated. She's a fool if she thinks she can hide the fact that she's turned on from me. I've spent far too long studying her now. I know every slight, subtle change in her mood and where it will take her. She turns to me, smiling conspiratorially. I think she's a little embarrassed. This isn't so bad. I was picturing some crazy mass orgy or something. Lots of people all having sex on some giant gross bed. I smirk, gesturing to the open, insignificant-looking doorway off to one side by the stage. Walk through there, and that's exactly what you'll find. Her eyes double in size. Jesus. Along with sex swings and racks and little private rooms and, well, just don't walk through that door unless you're prepared to see some shit. She swallows thickly. Kind of adorable, really. Kinky little Dolcezza. Doesn't even realize she's kinky yet. She's like the bud of a flower, petals all wrapped up and swaddled tight around herself, waiting to bloom. I think I need another drink, she tells me, grabbing hold of my hand. Behind the bar, Jasmine and Delilah are running the show tonight. They're dressed in next to nothing, little kick shorts barely covering their expertly fake tanned ass cheeks, tits threatening to spill out of their bikini tops any second. They won't spill out, though. They're fake and barely even fucking bounce as the girls hurry up and down the bar, serving guest after guest. Delilah sees me standing at the end of the bar and breaks out into a mile-wide grin. She gestures that she'll be with me next. Blondie sure has a big smile for you. I'm assuming she wants to fuck you, Silver says teasingly. She leans up against the bar next to me, arching an eyebrow suggestively. She does, I say coolly. Silver looks both horrified and amused. Awesome. Now I'm up against porn star wannabes with perfect teeth and giant tits. I suppose I'd better make the most of my time with you if that's my competition. She isn't. A porn star wannabe? Your competition, I clarify. You don't have any. I angle my body leaning into her, enjoying the scent of gardenia that hits the back of my nose when I breathe her in. There isn't a woman in this building you need to worry about, Argento. I rumble. There isn't a single woman in the world you should think about that way. Oh, come on. She laughs. Guys always want their hall passes. They usually set it aside for Jessica Alba. Fuck that. I tangle my fingers into her hair, enjoying the thickness of it. She looks up, pale blue irises fixing on me, and the future stretches out in front of me. It's happening more and more often. The questions that used to plague me every hour of the day ricocheting around the inside of my head like stray bullets demanding answers. All crumbled to ash. See, they're no longer necessary. The uncertainties, the decisions that will need making, the choices I will have to make, they have all been taken care of with the arrival of just one person in my life, Silver. Whatever happens now, whatever I wind up doing, Silver is the only thing in my life that really, truly matters. You've taken root now. I'm done. You're all there is for me from here on out. Every word is true. She feels the weight of the truth in my confession. I can see it on her face, but she chooses to continue with her line of joking, self-deprecation anyway. I'm sure you wouldn't be saying that if Jessica Alba was up on that stage making eyes at you. We can stop talking about Jessica Alba now. I have no clue who she is, but she doesn't fucking matter. You are the sun, Silver. You're gravity. You're the air in my fucking lungs. I'm a satellite trapped in your orbit, and I'll remain here until the end of time. My face and my dumb, wretched heart will always be turned to you. I'm not a romantic person by nature. I don't say these things to try to flatter her with pretty words. This is simply the confession of a helpless man resigned to a beautiful fate. We stare at each other like we're both tumbling forward into the void of eternity, and neither one of us can stop ourselves from falling.
Christ almighty, that shit is far too intense for this crowd,
a laughing voice says. Female, bright, high-pitched, Alabama accent. Delilah. The connection between Silver and I snaps. Suddenly we're standing back at a bar, in a sex club of all fucking places, and there's a blonde woman leaning over the lacquered wood, sliding a manicured hand up my bare forearm.
Alex Moretti, I have begged you to come hang out with me down here, and you have shut me down every time. Who is this gorgeous young thing you're eye-fucking? And more importantly, are you planning on sharing her?
Delilah's probably not bisexual. The girls here will flirt with one another all the time if they think it'll make a customer hard. I'm not a customer, and Silver isn't just some other stripper. But Delilah's a resourceful girl. She's been doggedly trying to bed me for at least 6 months. I think it's become a game to her now, purely because I keep saying no. More than likely, making eyes at Silver is just another crapshoot on her part, throwing something at the wall to see if it sticks. I withdraw my arm, finding Silver's hand and lacing my fingers through hers. Sorry, Lila. We're doing research for a school project. Do all strippers have daddy issues? Care to comment? I'm joking. I'm never cruel to the girls. She needs to know this isn't happening, though. She drops the act, rising out of her, popped hip check out my delicious curves lean, the same lean that pays her fucking rent, and throws back her head laughing loudly.
Such a shit, Moretti. And wow, how do I keep forgetting you're still in high school? Thanks for the unpleasant wake-up call. I probably need therapy, but I can't quit the chase with you, jailbait.
Age of consent is 16 in the glorious state of Washington, I remind her. I'm legal, just not interested. This is my girlfriend, Silver.
Huh. Yeah, the intense staring contest gave away the fact that you two weren't just fucking. Girlfriend, huh? Bold move, Alex. I am impressed. Monty tried to fuck you yet, sweetheart?
She asks Silver.
If he tries anything, don't bother trying to talk him down. Go straight for the balls. He barely feels it anymore, but it's the only version of no he understands.
Silver blinks. Her face has gone completely blank. Takes longer than it should for it to click. Any joke about a guy trying to force himself onto Silver is going to go down like a lead fucking balloon. I squeeze her hand, shaking her head. She's fucking with you. Monty doesn't even hit on the girls. He's all business. Delilah pretends to pout, sighing dramatically.
Honestly, I think he's a eunuch. I'd suspect he was gay, but the guys who dance here sometimes have all taken a run at him too, and...
A quick shrug of her shoulders.
Nothing.
Silver doesn't really know how to act. This is a strange situation, an exchange that commenced with a sexual proposition. Her awkwardness is plain in the way she tucks her hair back behind her ear and then repeats the motion less than a second later. Trouble is, Delilah's a pain in the ass. She's as blatant as a hammer to the side of the head. But she's also super bubbly and genuinely likable. Silver's probably having a hell of a time deciding if she's supposed to hate the woman on sight or want to go gossip about boys with her in the bathroom.
Since you two high schoolers are only here to research a school project, I obviously can't serve you alcohol,
she says formally.
But can I interest you in some soda?
The bottle of Patron Silver Delilah holds up in her hands looks nothing like soda to me. I bite back a smirk as she pours two healthy measures into a pair of rocks glasses in front of us. When I try to pay, she rolls her eyes like I'm the most tiresome creature she's ever come across.
What do you think this place is? We don't charge staff members for soda. Get the hell out of here before you really offend me.
I plant a 20 on the bar for her as a tip instead. We collect our drinks, and I lead the way toward the stage. The place is packed, so the booths are all taken. Luckily, there's a table free right in the middle of the madness, though. Silver sits, eyes fixed on the dark-haired dancer, twin spots of color burning high on her cheekbones.
I don't want to be that person, but I can't help it. I have to ask, she hisses. How many girls have you slept with here?
Inside the actual building? Or who work here, you mean? Silver does a terrible job of containing her horror. It's difficult not to laugh.
Who work here, I suppose?
She answers. In that case, none. She looks like she doesn't believe me.
All right, I'll bite. How many women have you fucked inside the actual building, then?
Damn, my cheeks are killing me. I want to laugh so fucking bad, it hurts. I take my time, pretending to count out my conquests on both hands, twice. Eventually, I nod, face her, and say, none.
What?
I'm not gonna lie. There have been plenty of opportunities on both accounts. Monty doesn't like drama, though. He'd kill me if I brought it to his doorstep. I'm not stupid enough to dip my pen in company ink. This is hardly the kind of place you'd bring a date to get laid either. A glaring lie, apparently, since that's exactly what the rest of the people sitting in front of this stage have done this evening. The burlesque dancer stalks on her high heels down the steps from the stage, into the crowd in front of us, and the people around us draw in a collective breath. Her fans are still in her hands, covering her breasts, but she's been more daring with them now, letting her hands drop for a second or two longer when she teases them across her body. Silver sips from her drink, hiding her face in her glass, but her curiosity pours off like smoke from a raging forest fire. I watch as she peers at the dancer over the top of her tequila. Her breath quickens when the woman with the black hair, smooth and straight as a ruler, selects a guy from the audience and straddles his lap, winding her arms and legs around him. She grinds herself into his lap for a second, painted lips parted, her fans dropping, pinned between their bodies, and she leans down, a millimeter away from kissing him. But then she quickly turns to the woman sitting beside the guy, obviously his wife from the tortured look of disbelief on her face, and grabs her by the neck, pulling her into a deep kiss.
Holy shit, Silver hisses under her breath.
I take a sip, hiding my face in my glass. I'm trying not to smirk. Silver elbows me in the ribs.
Don't laugh. This is all new to me,
she complains. You're adorably innocent for someone who loves fucking so much, Argento. A flush of color climbs up her neck. She doesn't know what to say to that. She knows I'm right. She's acting like a little schoolgirl who's never been touched before.
I guess you'll have to rid me of my last scraps of innocence then, won't you, Alessandro Moretti?
Oh, Silver. Silver, Silver, Silver. Sounds like she's feeling brave. She has no clue what it would be like for me to do what she's asking of me, though. How about we just stay here and ride this thing out, see how comfortable you are first? She keeps her mouth shut. The show continues, growing more and more risque as the night progresses. Delilah sends over two more drinks for us, and we both drain our glasses, both of us watching as the burlesque dancer abandons her feathers and all sense of modesty along with them. Before long, she's on her knees, three tables over, with a guy's hard cock in her mouth, blowing him while his wife strokes and fingers her naked pussy. The tequila's gone to my head and to my dick. I've never struggled to maintain an erection when I'm drunk. Tonight, I'm harder than a length of fucking steel rebar, and it isn't because of what the burlesque dancer's doing. It's because Silver's tits are straining against the flimsy material of her shirt, and her breathing's a little too uneven. She's enjoying what's going on around us, fascinated by the sight of so much naked flesh. After all, it isn't just the couple with the dancer who have thrown caution to the wind. Nearly all the couples around us are either making out now, groping at each other's bodies, or they're out and out fucking. She turns into me, burying her face into my neck, hiding.
Alex.
Her voice is thick with hunger. The sound sends a body-wide shiver racing down my spine. My arms already around her waist. I slip my hand up underneath her shirt, tracing my fingers over her skin, drawing small circles against her side. What is it, Argento? Are you a little hot and bothered? No. She denies it immediately, even though she lets out a small, breathless gasp right after her denial. I'm just... You want to be naked. You want me inside you. You want my hands all over your skin. She pants again, a frustrated breath rushing past my ear. Yes, I think so. I move my hand upward, my fingertips burning a trail over her ribcage until I reach the lacy cup of her bra. She squirms against me, and I chuckle under my breath. You think, or you know, Silver, I can't do anything with uncertainties. I know. I am officially impressed. I never thought she'd be this brave, or this kinky for that matter. I get to my feet, holding out my hand to her, and she looks up at me with confusion in her eyes. What, are we leaving? No, Dolcezza. I'm going to give you what you've been needing since we came down here. Come on, come with me. She doesn't ask questions, not even when I lead her through the mass of writhing bodies in front of the stage and pull us in the direction of the door that leads to the back rooms. God knows what kind of thoughts are racing through her head. She follows, close at my back, wide-eyed as I guide her down a long hallway, passing numerous open doors and into a large, open space that has been arranged with at least 10 king-sized beds. The stage crowd is tame compared to what's happening back here. On one of the beds, three couples have all joined forces, stroking and touching each other's naked bodies. A woman with heavy, swinging, natural tits bounces up and down on top of a guy I'm guessing she didn't arrive here with tonight, while another guy, lying on his back, watches them fiercely, stroking his hand up and down his cock. Two of the women make out, tongues laving and licking at each other's mouth and necks, while another woman pants and moans against a handrail bolted to the wall, being fucked from behind by a third guy. Atop every bed, a similar debauched adventure is taking place, people grinding and licking, sucking and fucking. Silver casts a stunned look around the room, her mouth falling open, the tip of her perfect pink little tongue darting out to wet her lips as she takes in our new, highly deviant surroundings. I stroke her hair back over her shoulder, leaning into her so I can growl roughly into her ear. How about this? Is this what you want, Argento? Or should we turn around now and head on back upstairs? The black light cast off from the bulbs overhead make her teeth and the whites of her eyes glow green, and as she meets my gaze, I want to try. I want to see what it feels like to be watched. The growl intensifies in the back of my throat. She looks so damned innocent, so fucking delicious and unprepared. I hate that I'm not a better man. I should take her away from here and whisk her away from here immediately. But that's not what I'm going to do. Her pale eyes are full of determination, which means she wants this. She's going to be pissed if I deny her. And damn me to hell, I'm not strong enough to err on the side of sanity tonight. I've already imagined her straddling me, riding the shit out of me on top of the bed to our right, and I want it more than I want to be good. I draw her into me, bringing my mouth down onto hers, and the softness of her pliant lips against mine coaxes a strained groan out of me. This can't be fucking real. How can it be? I'm experienced in many things. I've fucked girls before. I've fucked grown women who have asked me to do some pretty kinky shit. But I have never done this with anyone. I'm blown away that I'm getting to do it with a girl I have fallen so fucking hard for, even if it might not be the best idea in the world. I'm going to take it slow. I'm going to make sure she's comfortable every step of the way. If she's unsure, even a sec. The thought cuts off when Silver pulls back, pausing the kiss, and she rips her shirt off over her head. Fuck. Okay. It doesn't look like she wants to take things slowly. I stand back, half amused, half out of my mind with lust, as Silver unbuttons her jeans and wriggles them down her hips. She only stops what she's doing when she's in her underwear, reaching around behind herself to unfasten her bra.
"What's the matter?"
she asks, staring up into my face defiantly.
"You coming over all shy, Alessandro Moretti?"
I feel my lip pull back. I feel myself snarl. I don't recognize myself right now, and I sure as hell don't recognize Silver. "You're fucking magnificent," I rumble. My hands twitch, desperate to feel the soft, smooth silk of her skin beneath them. God, I want to make her shiver and quake. I want to hear her panting cries for more over every other girl's in this room. My leather jacket comes off slow. I drop it at my feet, not giving a shit if it gets lost or stolen. My t-shirt goes next, then my pants. Silver laughs softly as she attempts to remove her bra again, but I grab her savagely by the wrists, shaking my head. "Don't touch yourself. It's my right to strip you naked, Argento." Her head tips back and I fall on her like a winter storm. I tear the lace of her bra when I tear it from her. She gasps, fingers digging into my back as I fall to my knees and drag her panties down her body, exposing her to the world for all to see. She's off the ground and I'm carrying her, throwing her down on the empty bed behind us 2 seconds later. There are eyes on us, watching us, feasting on our young, perfect flesh, and it seems to be driving Silver fucking crazy. She arches her back off the bed, rolling her head to one side, watching the couple on the bed closest to us fucking.
"Alex, Alex."
My name comes out of her like a whispered prayer.
"God, Alex, please."
She obeys me when I push her legs apart. My brave little Argento spreading her legs for me, unashamed, opening herself to me in front of 30 other people. She's fucking beautiful, like a night orchid in full bloom. I palm my dick, positioning myself between her legs, feeling the heat and weight of strangers' eyes on my back. I rub the tip of my cock into Silver's pussy, applying pressure to her clit, and she angles her hips up toward me, frantically shaking her head.
"No, no, just fuck me, Alex, please. God, I need you so fucking bad, please."
I fucking love foreplay. I love it more than the actual sex most of the time, but we are so beyond any of that now. I grit my teeth as I push myself inside her, supplying what she needs. She's so tight around me, hotter and wetter than she's ever been. I don't stop thrusting myself into her until I'm balls deep, and even then she grinds up, rolling her hips, asking me for more. Falling on her, I rock myself forward, hissing when she reaches up and grabs hold of my hair, pulling hard.
"Harder, Alex, please, harder."
I oblige her, since she's begging so nicely. Her nails drive deep into my back, making me curse loudly, and my mind goes blank. I'm no longer aware of what drives me, but I answer its call anyway, driving myself into her over again, so hard that I can feel her body rock with each impact. I love this girl. I love her more than I can comprehend, which is why I bite her when she pleads for me to sink my teeth into her skin. I close my hand around her throat when she pulls on my hands. I do whatever she urges me to, regardless of the fact that it's too much, too rough, too wild, too raw and crazy. When she comes beneath me, frenzied, slick with our sweat, I don't care that I've broken her skin with my love, and again I've made her bleed. It doesn't matter. Because Silver Parisi is slack and dazed from her pleasure, and my body is numb from my own. It's not until we're dressed and leaving the basement of the club that we both notice Jacob Weaving leaning against the wall by the exit, wearing an ugly sneer on his face.
23. Silver. Thanksgiving comes and goes. Dad invites Alex to stay again for the first time since the storm, and I try and pretend not to notice the fact that Max and Mom aren't here. As a family, we have so many dorky holiday traditions that are all pointless without Mom and Max. My mother would never have allowed Alex to sleep in the house, even in the guest room, and my brother was a perfect little monster the last time I saw him, though, so I make the best of the situation. Jackie refuses to let Alex see Ben before they take off for Hawaii. He doesn't mention it, but I know it plays on his mind as the three of us rattle around the big old house, concocting a surprisingly edible Thanksgiving dinner between us. Dad cracks truly horrible jokes that make us groan. Nipper gorges himself on turkey and even lets us pet his distended tummy while he digests his Thanksgiving dinner. He falls asleep on Alex at 7:30 promptly each night. In the mornings that follow, Dad and Alex do something really strange. They start running together. Even weirder, they spend an hour after their run locked in the garage together, hitting a punching bag Dad hasn't used since, well, never. This gives me plenty of time to write music and get ahead on all of my schoolwork, but I don't get to hang out with Alex until the afternoon, when he's finally changed out of his sweat-soaked clothes and showered. When I first met Alex, I was naturally very worried about how my father was going to take a heavily tattooed, motorcycle-riding bad boy invading my life and claiming every waking moment of my day. Turns out, I should have been more worried about Dad stealing Alex from me. They even seem to have their own secrets and private jokes, all of them heavy disguised as underhanded digs. The Wednesday after Thanksgiving, Alex surprises me by sneaking into the shower in my ensuite, while I'm in it. He fucks me hard up against the tiles, his hand firm and demanding, mouth hot and wet against my skin. And when he comes, he roars so loud that Dad slams the front door and leaves the house. Reluctantly, Alex says he has to go back to the trailer after that. He has shifts at the Rock he needs to show up for, and there are other mysterious things he has to take care of over the next couple of days that are going to monopolize most of his time. He won't tell me what he's up to, but he seems excited, energized. It feels like the world's ending when I kiss him on the doorstep of the house, sulking because I won't be able to see him again for 3 more days. He laughs at my pouting mouth and over-the-top complaining, but he's the one who struggles to let go of my hand as he walks away down the driveway. Dad does me a solid and doesn't mention the fact that he definitely heard us having sex when he comes home. He doesn't mention anything about the fact that Alex is gone either. 2 days later, on Friday evening, he stands in my bedroom doorway with a heavy-looking black bag in his hand, face a little grim.
"Gotta go out for a bit, kiddo," he says, leaning against the door jamb. "I ordered in some Chinese food for you. Extra orange chicken. Should be here in about half an hour. I'm not gonna be back till late, probably. No need to wait up for me."
I stick a piece of paper inside the book I was reading, marking my place, and then I set it down, eyeing him suspiciously. Black jeans, black t-shirt, black jacket. "God, Dad," I groan. "Please tell me you're not gonna start dressing like Alex now. It's great you guys are bonding and all, but this is a little ridiculous, don't you think?" Dad's eyes widen, his head tipping to one side.
"I can't believe my own child would be so hurtful," he says theatrically. "The very last thing I'd ever do is mimic your brooding, grumpy boyfriend. Black is a classic look, Silver. You can never go wrong with black, especially if there are clandestine meetings afoot."
"No, Dad, are you going on a date?"
"No, no. God, no. Never mind. I probably shouldn't have said that. I have to get going or I'm gonna be late. Don't forget to listen out for the doorbell, okay?"
"Dad?" He was turning to leave, throwing his words over his shoulder at me as he walked back out onto the landing. But the second I say his name, he stops.
"Hmm?
What's with the bag?"
"Huh?"
"The bag. The black one you're holding in your hand. What's in it?" Dad falters, looking down at the offending article that he indeed is still holding in his hand.
Just books. Just some old architectural books I'm returning to a friend."
I narrow my eyes. "Are you lying to me, Father?" He nods without hesitation.
"Yep, not proud of it. Hoping we can move on without this being a thing. I have a bag, and it contains a few items that I'm choosing not to tell you about. I'm afraid that's gonna have to be good enough, kiddo.
They're not sex toys, are they? Urgh, Dad, you are going on a date.
No, what? Hey, wait. What would be so bad about me going on a date?
I pick up my book and open it. Well, you look like you're about to break and enter somewhere, for starters. And then there's the matter of the weird facial hair you're still cultivating. If you are planning on trying to romance any new prospects soon, you should probably let me take you shopping. I look up from my book. The doorway to my bedroom is empty. The mere mention of shopping has always had my father sprinting in the opposite direction as fast as he can humanly manage. I think all of that running with Alex this week is paying off, though. The old man's exits have become infinitely faster.
24. Alex. She said I looked like I was about to go break and enter, for fuck's sake. I clench my jaw, pulling up my hood against the cold. We've been planning for days, making contingencies in case something comes up, organizing meeting points in case we're separated, and it seemed like we had our bases covered. Cameron hasn't stopped freaking out since he arrived 15 minutes ago, though, and I'm already trying to come up with a way to make him stay in the fucking car. The last thing we need is him losing his shit in the middle of this and blowing our cover. Just because she said that's what you looked like doesn't mean she knew that's what you were gonna do. Everything's fine. Look, if you want to go home, no way. Not happening. Just pass me the flashlight. I'm not going anywhere. Jesus. At least if I'm here and we do get caught, we'll have some credibility. Who's going to believe that you were just passing through the neighborhood and accidentally found yourself inside Caleb Weaving's pool house? I fail to see how your presence gives us credibility, I argue. What brilliant excuse would you have for us being inside Caleb Weaving's pool house? He grumbles under his breath. I'm a respected member of the community. I designed the mayor's house, for fuck's sake. I'm on the town planning committee. I'm sure whatever I came up with would be more plausible than I got lost and the door was open. All right, Poindexter, why don't you work on that in your head while I figure out how we're going to get around the side of the house without setting off those perimeter lights? The Weaving residence is a monstrosity, a disgusting show of wealth and power presented in the gaudiest manner imaginable. Cam pretended to throw up in his mouth when I killed the engine of the Impala Monty loaned me. Who tries to combine Baroque fascias with Art Deco window casements anyway? He mumbled. I was more offended that the place was painted a pale bubblegum pink color and sticks out amongst the gathered trees like a thumb that isn't just sore, but has also had a hammer taken to it. The ugliest, most expensive home I have ever fucking seen. Leon Wickman's place was probably almost as costly, but that building was designed with finesse, married with an understanding and appreciation for nature. The sprawling Weaving Manor is just a fucking mess.
There'll be a mains box somewhere near that tree over there, Cam says, pointing. There's an electrical box just underneath that window, too. See it? We don't want to cut any of the wiring. That'll scream foul play if someone comes across it. We can just...
I get out of the car, making sure the door doesn't slam closed behind me. I can't sit and listen. I can't just fucking sit anymore. I've waited long enough. When Monty said I had 5 days to come and cleave my pound of flesh from Jacob Weaving's body before the cops came and carted him away, I did what I thought was right. I dismissed the suggestion out of hand. If justice was finally going to be served, then me showing up in the middle of the night to hurt the fucker would be pure, unadulterated, selfish vengeance. That decision stuck in my throat. Staying my hand felt like a missed opportunity to wreak chaos in the bastard's life. But it had also felt, I don't know, like I was growing up, becoming a better man or some shit. And then he went and tried to drag her into the boys' locker rooms, like he thought he could still do whatever the fuck he felt like and get away with it, regardless of the fact that I'm in Silver's life now. And that altered my perspective. That brazen, fucked up act changed my mind so quickly it nearly gave me fucking whiplash. No way was I going to be able to stay my hand when I laid eyes on those bruises around her throat. I no longer had a choice. Juvie's bad. Prison is worse. A strange code of honor exists between most inmates inside penitentiaries. Armed robbery, assault, theft, even fucking murder. There's a vast litany of crimes that can land you behind the bars of a cell, and your indiscretion usually won't matter to the guy you end up bunking with. But rape? Pedophilia? Those are two sins that'll usually land you in the prison infirmary for a very, very long time, repeatedly. Jake's not going to enjoy his time at Monroe or Cedar Creek. Whichever prison they send him to, it doesn't matter. It's going to be a living hell on earth for him. But it's not enough, damn it. The moment he laid his hands on Silver again, I knew no punishment was going to suffice unless I administered it fucking personally. I've been fighting the urge to wait until tonight to come over here. Every night, it's been tempting as fuck to sneak over here without Cam and leave a mark or two of my own on Jacob. But I've held back, shown restraint. The time for restraint is over. Now that we're here and Jacob's asleep in his bed less than 100 meters away, I am officially antsy as fuck. Whatever Cameron has to say can wait. I head toward the house. Cam gets out of the Impala, hissing under his breath as he ducks down, hurrying after me along the perimeter of the gravel driveway. "What the fuck are you doing?" I hiss. "Don't walk. If you're dead set on doing this, then the least you can do is fucking run." He sets off, sprinting like his life depends on it. Monty's black bag, which I asked him to bring with him tonight, bouncing against his back as he darts over a small section of lawn, hitting the boundary line of the property, sticking to the shadows cast off by the forest. If someone just so happens to be looking out of a window right now, then fair enough. It'll probably be really fucking difficult to see him. He's just made his route around the side of the house 3 times longer, though. I duck and run straight for the ugly pink pile of bricks and wood, snarling with every step that brings me closer to Jacob. I've considered every way this thing could possibly play out. There's a very real chance we're going to get caught, and if that happens, then I am definitely 100% absolutely fucked. I'll make sure that son of a bitch gets what's coming to him before I'm carted off in handcuffs, though. I'm gonna make that motherfucker bleed. Predictably, the security lights come on when I'm halfway around the house. Columns of brilliant white light explode into the night, cutting through the darkness like the searchlights depicted in about 1,000 Prison Break movies. Shunk, shunk, shunk. I pause, back pressed to the wall, heart hammering in my ears while I wait for the sound of a door or a window opening. No sound comes. Across the way, Cam's stabbing a finger in the direction of the pool house, mouthing something furiously at me. It's too dark over there in the shadows to see shit, let alone read his fucking lips. God damn it, Cameron. I take off, shoving away from the wall, sprinting along the perimeter of the house, hoping like hell that no one catches sight of the dark blur racing over the grass. Once I'm around the rear of the property, I duck down behind the poolside tiki bar. Fucking poolside tiki bar. Fuck these assholes. And I wait for Silver's dad. He's seconds behind me. Cam's blowing hard as he sinks down into a crouch, leaning his head back against the bamboo framework of the bar, closing his eyes. The guy has no common sense. He looks relieved, which means he hasn't given any thought to the next part of our plan. The part where we bust into the pool house and beat Jacob Weaving's teeth right out of his head with a couple of wrenches.
"That was close," he pants.
He was so amped the night we made pizza, so full of fire and brimstone. The steel in his eyes had impressed the shit out of me. I'd thought he would be able to handle this. Now I'm not so sure. I don't want him getting caught. I don't want this to go south and for him to wind up in prison. "Seriously, man, go back to the car. Plausible deniability's a thing. If you don't get seen here, fuck you," he growls. "We've been through this already. We do not have time to relive the I nearly abandoned Silver on the day she was born story, so shut the fuck up." I respect Cam. I respect the shit out of him because he gave Silver life, and I owe him a lifetime's happiness because of that. However, with every passing second, I'm beginning to see him as less of an authority figure and more of an annoying friend I want to throat punch. I don't like being told to shut the fuck up by him, that's for sure. I growl unhappily, suppressing the urge to curl my lip and show teeth. Has he ever found himself thrown into a holding cell that reeks of piss? Does he know what it's like to be trapped in a tiny 10x10 windowless room with three other men, wondering who's going to hit you first? I doubt it. He's not going to accept the out I'm offering to him, though. I can see it in his eyes. He's determined to follow this plan through, irrespective of whatever it might cost him. He loves Silver just as much as I do. All right, fine. Have it your way. Just don't say I didn't warn you. I get to my feet, hurrying across the patio to the rear of the house, skirting around the pool. From there, it's a straight shot to the large, single-story pool house to the left-hand side of the yard. The building is twice the size of my trailer, bigger than most standard-sized homes. The huge bay windows are darkened, curtains drawn within. The lights are off inside, too, no warm glow escaping through cracks in the heavy fabric. When we reach the door of the pool house, Cam sticks a hand into Monty's mysterious black bag and pulls out a wrench. He raises the tool and pulls it back, fingers closed around it in a fist, like he's about to use it to punch a hole through the double-glazed glass.
Whoa, 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 what the fuck are you doing?
I hiss.
You'll wake up the entire neighborhood.
Cam looks disappointed. The guy's been ramping himself up for the past 72 hours. He probably hasn't been able to sleep for thinking about the lengths he might have to go to tonight. He's played out the moment when we confront Jake in his head 1,000 times. He's become accustomed to the idea that he's going to have to break, smash, cut, and hurt tonight in order to accomplish his goal. Now here I am, preventing him from following through, and he doesn't like it one bit.
Try the door first, I tell him, jerking my chin at the sleek, narrow length of brushed metal in front of him. It'll be locked.
I say nothing. I stand and wait for him to try the fucking door handle. Cam places a gloved hand on the handle, huffing as he checks to see if the door's already open. He gives me a smug, I told you so look when it doesn't budge.
Should I smash it now?
No, fuck. Haven't you heard of the element of surprise? Get out of the way.
Cam glares at me, but he steps to one side, giving me access to the door. I pull a hairpin and a slim, hooked pick from my wallet, sliding both into the door's lock, feeling around for the moment when I hit the catch. 2 seconds later, I find the point of resistance inside the barrel of the lock, and I work my magic, popping it open with a deft twist of my wrist.
I should be worried about that, Cam mutters under his breath. The sad truth is that I'm just impressed.
That's nothing. He'd be seriously fucking impressed if he saw me break into a Tesla in under 5 seconds flat. I keep that to myself, though. The door to the pool house swings silently open, and I creep inside first, eyes sharp, squinting into the darkness. We've walked straight into the living area. A huge sectional couch monopolizes most of the space, arranged around the biggest flat-screen TV I've ever fucking seen. It's obscenely big, really. Cam arches a derisive eyebrow in the television's direction as he follows behind me, silent, taking note of his surroundings. It's great that he's on the lookout, but he won't be looking for the same things I'm looking for. Cam's looking for people, Jake, to be precise. I'm scanning the bookcases and the shelves, the ceilings at the corners of the room. The Weavings are bound to have a camera system set up inside the main house, but inside the pool house, that's a tricky one. This is Jake's domain. He's unlikely to want Big Brother spying on him in his private sanctuary. The shit he gets up to in here would probably even turn his father's stomach. My instincts prove to be correct. I see no blinking red lights as I cast my eyes around. I hear no faint electronic whirring that would spell disaster for us and our mission. There are 2 rooms leading off from the main living space of the pool house. I head toward the door on the left first, since it's closer. The blinds are drawn inside the room, but a faint blue glow from the lit pool outside works its way between the gaps, casting enough light to illuminate our surroundings. Not a bedroom, it would seem. Mirrors line the far wall. In the very center of the room, a bench press takes up most of the space, the bar still loaded by weight. By the window, a treadmill and an exercise bike loom out of the shadows. Obviously, Jake uses this as his private home gym.
Though God knows why he would ever need to use it. Coach Quentin drills the football team to breaking point every single day after school. Those training sessions are fucking exhausting. Jake's definitely taking steroids if he comes home and hits this place up after taking such a beating for the Roughnecks. I'm backing out of the room when Cameron turns, catching sight of himself in the mirror next to us. Fuck knows how he didn't notice the mirrored wall before. He jumps when he sees the dark shape moving next to him and immediately thinks he's under attack. The wrench he tried to smash the front door with almost goes flying as he lashes out with it. I catch him by the wrist in the nick of time. A split second later, and he would have sent the tool crashing into the glass. Jesus fucking Christ, I hiss. Give that to me. I rip the wrench out of his hand, confiscating it in a swift move that should honestly have taken place before we even entered the pool house. You're a fucking liability, Parisi, I tell him under my breath. Just be cool, man. Take a deep breath. Get your shit together. Chill. Don't you dare get another weapon out of that bag until I tell you to. Stay behind me and don't move a muscle until I tell you to. Cam's expression says it all. Like me, he doesn't appreciate being told what to do, but he's gonna land us in hot fucking water if I don't rein him in once and for all. My pulse should be racing. My adrenaline's high, pumping urgently around my body, making me hum with energy. But my heart rate is a slow, steady thump in my chest. I've always been like this in dangerous, high-stakes situations that would leave others anxious, bouncing on the balls of their feet, ready to explode into action. I'm galvanized, sharper, focused. My synapses firing so rapidly that I could jump from one thought to the next in a flurry of mental activity. Shame Cameron wasn't wired the same way. This would be going a lot smoother if he was. We cross the living room, heading for the other door, and once we reach it, I open it without hesitation. We've already wasted too much time. Also, we've made enough fucking noise since we walked into the pool house, and the last thing I want to do is give Jake an opportunity to bail out of a window and disappear off into the night before we've had a chance to spend any quality time with him. This time, we hit pay dirt. The door swings open, and voila. Definitely a bedroom. There are clothes strewn all over the floor, along with discarded shoes, books, plates, cutlery, and empty fast food wrappers. Unlike the rest of the pool house, this room is a fucking dump. It looks like a bunch of vagrants have been squatting in here for weeks. It's a miracle we didn't smell the damn bedroom the moment I picked the lock and we entered the pool house. Gross doesn't even cover it. The place is a health and safety hazard. I don't know if Cam's up to date on his shots, but I, for one, am glad that I had a tetanus booster last year. In the corner, the king-sized bed shoved up against the wall contains a body. A hand pokes out from underneath the welter of blankets. A foot. Tufts of dark hair are visible against white, fluffy pillows. A loud, juddering sound splinters the silence. The motherfucker is snoring like a goddamn chainsaw. Doesn't look like Jake knows we've broken into his home and are planning on causing him serious harm. From the sounds of things, the bastard could sleep through an air raid and be none the fucking wiser. Ah, Jake. Our individual codes of ethics are diametrically opposed. Our hearts and our consciences pull us in different directions, but we both have strong personalities. We both inspire strong feelings in others. It sometimes results in them contemplating murder. We are both the kind of guy who shouldn't let his guard down, even when he's sleeping. Except you've dropped the motherfucking ball, haven't you, son? You have let your guard down. Here you are, sleeping like you're already fucking dead. I motion down the duffel bag, giving him the go-ahead to take out another weapon. The moment he and I have both been waiting for has finally arrived. Jake should never have been allowed to go this long unpunished for what he did to Silver. Although, there is something bittersweet about the fact that so much time has passed since the party at Leon Wickman's house. The first couple of weeks after Jake raped Silver, he was probably on edge, antsy, wondering if a pair of handcuffs were going to be slapped on his wrists and he was going to be carted off to jail. He probably held his breath a lot. Every time his father's phone rang, he probably suffered at the hands of his own paranoia. But as the days and weeks continued to roll on without consequence, Jake must have become more and more complacent. Darhauer shut Silver down when she tried to report to him what had happened. She didn't tell her parents. Her friends were actively shunning and bullying her in the corridors of Raleigh High. She had no one by her side. No one was listening to her. No one believed her, which essentially meant that Jacob was in the clear. Now, after months of rote Raleigh High routine, showing up at school, intimidating Silver in the classrooms and the canteen, making life as miserable as possible for her at every available turn, and absolutely nothing happening about it, Jacob must think he's gotten away with his crime scot-free. Well, tonight, here in this pool house, with none of his dumb, knuckle-dragging Neanderthal football cronies to back him up, Jacob is about to find out just how wrong he was. Cam's nerves have dissipated since we entered Jacob's bedroom. They're gone, evaporated. The bumbling, panicking guy tripping over his own feet and shaking with uncertainty is gone. And the Cameron from Pizza Night has finally made an appearance. His downturned mouth is locked in an unhappy grimace, firm but set. He's made up his mind. He's accepted what he's about to do, and he's made his peace with it. The change in him is miraculous. When I glance over and see the weapon he's chosen to draw out of the black duffel bag, a cold chill skates up my spine. There are plenty of implements Cameron could have selected to hurt Jacob. Plenty of things that could cause him immense pain and drag out this whole experience for a very long time indeed. Cameron's choice of weapon is endgame, though. It's the most final option he could have chosen. It's the Desert Eagle.
Aiutami, Passerotto. Aiutami. A premere il grilletto.
The cool silver metal in Silver's father's hands gleams. My heart rate slows. Time slows. What the fuck am I supposed to do here? It's one thing terrorizing a vile asshole who hurts someone you love. It's one thing doling out much-needed justice. It's another thing entirely staring down the barrel of a murder charge and preparing to pull the trigger. If I allow Cameron to do this, I'm more than complicit. I'm an accessory. Even if we aren't caught for the crime, this kind of violence leaves a stain on the soul that can't be undone. How far am I willing to go here? How much am I willing to lose? Am I willing to pay the ultimate price? Am I willing to lose Silver? Really lose her? For good? Cameron raises the gun, determination sparking in eyes that have hardened to flint. There's nothing soft about him now, nothing comedic or unsure. His finger hovers over the trigger, a millimeter above the steel. If I'm going to stop this, I have to do it now.